The Monty Show, Friday, October 12, 2018. America, you owe us money. It's Locks on a Friday. Every Friday, we're going to deliver you usually 6 to 8 games, depending on the quality of the games. Today, it's 4 in college, 3 in the National Football League. Huge news if you're a BYU fan. I think huge news if you're a Laker fan. You finally don't have to spend money on your Lakers. I have a reason not to spend money on the Los Angeles Lakers. I'll tell you about that coming up. But without further ado, make sure you follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Make sure you follow us online, themontyshow.com. Because right now it's time to hook you up with picks. Last week we were straight up 500. We were fairly average.
Yep.
Another really good week in college for us, right? We were 2-1, and we were 1-2 in the NFL on locks. So 500. This week, I got to say, Jake, we've been working together, picking these games today, previewing these games. This is one of the most difficult weeks to pick games.
Yeah.
We have put hours into these previews and these picks, and I feel like we have some pretty solid picks. So why don't we start with the big game in college? Tomorrow is Georgia going to LSU. Going to Seattle, Jerron. Georgia's a 7-point favorite. 50.5 is the number. LSU, I think, has one of the best home field advantages in Baton Rouge. I love them at home. And I think the only question in this game is who wins the second half, because it's going to be really close. I think this is going to be a hard-fought contest. And I think the second half of this game will determine it. LSU's 8-2 in their last 10 against the spread. They're 5-0 at home in their last 5 against the spread. And I don't know what you think, but I think this comes down to which team runs the ball better.
Yeah, I would say that in these kind of games, these big name games where there's a huge home field advantage in a hostile environment of sorts, it does come down to running the football. But I think for LSU to win this game, they've got to disrupt in the backfield. You cannot allow Jake Fromm to have a 72.5% completion percentage. If that happens, you're going to lose the game. And I think for LSU, they do much better in games when they score on the first drive. If they score on that first initial drive, they're going to be in a much better place. But I still
have to score early.
Yeah, you've got to score early. And
just to keep the crowd in the game.
Oh, for sure. And I think you can't allow Georgia to just come in there and walk all over you on the first couple possessions. Because if that happens, they're going to feel right at home. They're going to get comfortable, and Fromm's going to go off. But I still have Georgia winning this game 35-31. I just think that they will go in there and get a big win.
Wow, that's way over. The number's 50.5. Georgia, again, favored by 7. You know, I think if LSU can run the ball, Nick Brissett's going to have 100 yards. Joe Burrow and his offensive line are going to have to win this game. Feel like this is one of those games that's the last 2 minutes of the game. And if LSU has the ball in the last 2 minutes with a chance to win the game, you know that place is going to be turned up. Yet it won't be enough, because I think Georgia wins. Georgia 28-27. That means LSU covers and this game goes over. I think Georgia gets the win, but LSU gets the cover. What'd you say your score prediction on this was?
35-31 Georgia.
Man, that is a huge, huge score. Let's move right along. Washington at Oregon. It is the second biggest game in the Pac-12. I said second biggest game.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even blink an eye at that. Washington is a 3.5-point favorite. The number here, you want to talk about a big number. How about 57.5 is the over on this game? And really, when we're the Huskies at the Ducks, I think this year we're talking about a battle of the quarterbacks. Justin Herbert for Oregon, Jake Browning for Washington. And you know the story at Washington. That defense is unbelievable. They've only given up 2 pass plays of 30 yards or more on the entire season. That easily leads the country. They're the only P5 team with fewer than 3 plays of 30 yards or less. And that's because Taylor Rapp and JoJo McIntosh, I think, are one of the best, potentially the best, safety tandem in the country.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be Herbert versus that Washington defense. I mean, the Washington defense is allowing 13.7 points a game. So, obviously, they're
good
dominating,
Lord.
Right? But on the same token, on the other hand, Oregon's offense is averaging 503 yards and 45.5 points. So the question for me is, how many points will Herbert and that offense score? Not how low it'll be. So I think in this game, Herbert is going to have to dominate. He's going to have an elite performance.
Do you buy into Jake Browning on the other side?
I don't buy into him. I don't think that he's as advertised. I know that he's a solid quarterback. I'm not trying to say he's a bad quarterback.
Yeah.
But I don't think Jake Browning is the quarterback that Herbert is. I think Herbert is excellent on the run. We were talking about it before the show. Is Washington going to get in that backfield? I have real reservations about that. And even if they do get into the backfield, Herbert's going to run away because he's excellent on the run throwing the ball.
How about this number? Washington's only got 8 sacks in 6 games. That's 97th nationally for an awesome defense.
Yeah.
And Washington is an awesome defense. Again, the Washington Huskies, 8 sacks, 6 games. That's 97th nationally. That wasn't bad enough. 6 of those 8 sacks are from defensive backs who are blitzing. That's not good.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you that Justin Herbert has a day. Oregon at home has won 10 of 14 versus top 10 opponents. I think Herbert's 12 first half touchdowns against 1 interception. So he's a fast starter, and I think he's going to have to be that. And Washington's got to get after the quarterback. I really struggled picking this game. I vacillated back and forth, which is to say I went back and forth trying to pick this team. I can see a model where Washington wins, where Oregon wins, but ultimately, at the end of the day, the stat that scares me the most is that Washington struggles to get to the quarterback and create tackles for loss.
Yeah.
And against Oregon at Autzen Stadium, which I think is one of the top home field advantages. Notice again, LSU, who we talked about, huge home field advantage. Autzen, who we talked about, huge home field advantage. And don't forget, the last time these two teams met in Autzen, Washington rolled huge, destroyed Oregon. They're looking for payback. And I think Oregon gets it. 31-27, Oregon wins it outright, and it goes over.
Yeah, I had real trouble picking a score for this game because I have a hard time believing that the Washington defense is going to allow 30-plus points in a game. So I decided to go a little bit under that. I went 27-24 Oregon, and I think it's a closer game, and I think Herbert will, at the end of the day, lead them to victory. He will have a drive in this game where the momentum is against him, and he will overcome.
Everybody's talking about the Washington defense, and nobody's talking about the Oregon defense. Oregon's very good against the run, which is not good news for Gaskin. And I also think that Oregon has the potential to expose that average Washington offensive line. I think there could be defensive points for Oregon in this game. We'll see. It's that kind of game. That's why I picked Oregon 31-27 over Washington. Now I think the most important game in the Pac-12 is Colorado at USC. USC at the Coliseum has an 18-game home winning streak. Do you realize that Clay Helton is 18-0 at home? He's undefeated as a home coach for the USC Trojans. Stunning, because they are wildly inconsistent. I find this game another one of those games where there is a huge story not being told, and it's about Colorado. Colorado, in my opinion, is one of the most overrated teams in the country. They're 19th in the country, but everybody says, well, they're the last undefeated team in the Pac-12. They're the only hope that the Pac-12 has of getting into the playoffs. Shut up. This is not a playoff team. Is it because they've played Colorado State and Nebraska and New Hampshire and UCLA and an okay but transitioning Arizona State team? Is that why they're 5-0? Because I can tell you, they haven't played the best competition in the country. Hardly have they played the best competition. In a way, you know that, is Montez, the quarterback at Colorado, right? Is this guy that is, oh man, leading the country in completion percentage, and this is a guy that is unbelievable, leading, he's a field general, everybody's all over Montez's jock. And Steven Montez is a really good quarterback. 75% completions, 11 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He's rated 174. Hand him the Heisman Trophy. To steal Lee Corso's line, not so fast, my friend. See, because again, they haven't played anybody. And Montez has played 2 games against USC in their vaunted defense. He's got 573 yards, 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. And this is a typo that he's only completed 52.5% of his passes against USC. USC's their first real, legitimate defensive test. Porter Gustin's going to play, which I think is a big deal as long as he doesn't target Montez. Or, well, I guess it doesn't matter because Pac-12 administrators will call in and say it's not targeting. Okay, I'll move on. Porter Gustin's going to play. Cam Smith supposedly is going to play with that ankle injury that he's got. Iman Marshall, I think, is one of the most important guys because of Mustafa Johnson, the linebackers. Like, there's all kinds of matchups in this game. I just am not a Buffalo believer.
Nope.
And maybe I'm overvaluing USC. Could be. But, Jake, I've got USC all day in this game.
Yeah, for me it's very simple. I think SC is going to pound the rock in this game. I think Ware for SC is going to go off. I think he has at least 100 yards rushing. I think they're going to out-athletic Colorado. I think defensively they're going to be fine. I don't see Colorado doing anything to that USC defense.
Well, it's Marshall versus Chenault. That's the whole deal.
And the thing is you know they're going to double-team Chenault. And so my question is, if you can't go to Chenault, who are you going to go to?
Well, what has Montez done really well? He's checked down. He throws more screens and checkdowns than any other quarterback in the country.
Yeah, and you're playing against two elite linebackers who are going to own that.
Yeah, well, and Porter Gustin, one of his, you know, one of the things he does really well is he plays angles. He's got real good speed, and his instincts are fantastic. I don't think USC is going to have any problem with this at all. They're a 7-point favorite, and I think they easily cover that. I've got SC 26-17, wing covering and going under the 57-point number.
Yeah, I got it 31-21 SC. I think this is an easy victory for them. I don't see them having any trouble either.
Yeah, well, and again, I'll just say, on the year, Colorado's opponent, their net record is 6-21.
Solid, bro.
The opponents they've played have a collective result of 6-21. They haven't played anybody.
Yeah.
A couple other games of note for our good friends in the great state of Utah. Zach Wilson, the Messiah! Has arrived in Provo. Told you Monday on the show. Monday I was at the Foo Fighters. Told you Tuesday on the show. No, Tuesday I had a migraine. We, two O's and Goose Boys. And Foo. Two O's and Foo Boys. On Wednesday we told you that we had been hearing that Zach Wilson was going to get the start. Zach Wilson's got the start. Against Hawaii at BYU, who's an 11-point home favorite. 56.5 is the number. Zach Wilson comes in and absolutely Mayfields these guys.
Yep.
Gives them energy, picks them up. While it's not an official lock, I like BYU 38-24 in this game. I think it goes over. I think they cover the number, and I think Zach Wilson goes on to be the next Teisman.
Okay. You're feeling confident.
Teisman to the rescue.
Feeling confident. Yeah, I think you're exactly right with the Baker comparison. You had Tanner Mangum. You know, he was the incumbent starter. We all knew he was going to start, but it was only a matter of time
before Wilson
was going to come in.
He's a game manager.
Yeah, and there's a lot of quarterbacks like that. Unfortunately, he just wasn't good enough. And so I just think at this time, you know, Wilson is the guy, and he will be the guy of your future. So it's nice to see him playing.
I sent a BYU fan on Twitter the Tom Hanks from Castaway yelling at his volleyball, Wilson! Yeah, I sent him that gift this week because I thought it, you know, I'd been hearing all week that it was a lock that he starts. So congratulations, Zach Wilson. Hey, kid, don't screw it up. Arizona at Utah. Utah's a 14-point home favorite in this game, and for a good reason, because I don't think Arizona's very good, and I don't think they're going to be great on the road. I love the Utes in this game coming off of that Stanford win that, by the way, we predicted. 37-20, I got the Utes over Arizona.
Yeah, I think the Utah defense is going to suffocate that Arizona offense. I don't know where Khalil Tate goes. I don't. The running stuff that he brings to the table is just not going to be good enough in this game. You're going to have to pass. You're going to have to bring a complete offensive, you know, plan to this game in order to beat the Utes. And that's not who Arizona is.
No.
So I'm right with you on this one.
So we're giving you Georgia to win, but LSU is going to cover. And it goes over. We're giving you Oregon 31-27 outright winners, and it goes over. Washington at Oregon in that game. We love Oregon in that game. We also love USC to roll the Buffs. Buff. We got SC winning, covering, and it going under. And then not locks, but we like BYU and Utah both to win this week. Shall we switch gears? to the National Football League. And I think the game of the week is Chiefs at Patriots. Everybody's excited about this game. By the way, I would just like to point out that Josh Gordon makes this unbelievable touchdown catch last week, right? Like, splits two defenders.
Yeah, it was great. It was awesome.
Tom Brady and Giselle are both, like, in love with him now, and it's a whole weird thing. Josh Gordon this week said he loves playing with Tom Brady, and that he, I mean, he just gushed about Tom Brady. How surprised are you that a wide receiver is gushing about playing with Tom Brady?
And I don't even know, to be honest with you, dude, I don't even think it's about Tom Brady. I think it's about the fact that he's finally playing somewhere where they're competitive, where they're good, right? It's amazing how winning changes your perspective.
Well, it's a lot on him.
I'm just saying you're in a different setting now. You're not playing for the freaking Browns.
Yeah, and the expectations are much higher. They're much different.
You're expected to be a professional.
Yeah, and I think they desperately needed Josh Gordon. I mean, they had to have him. You see a passing offense that is, you know, now top 10 in the National Football League. The numbers on this game are odd. It's Chiefs at Patriots, Sunday Night Football. The Pats are a 3.5-point favored at home. It's the biggest number total of the week at 59 is the number on this game. And really, it's all about Patrick Mahomes against Tom Brady. Mahomes is, I think, pretty amazing. 3 turnovers in 191 dropbacks. He's only turned the ball over 3 times. That's an incredible number. And one other incredible number is not good for Tom Brady. He's only rated 77.7 with a clean pocket. So when he's got time and protection, he's only a 77. That's a little alarming.
But I think part of this, too, and this applies to several different areas of the game for the Patriots, but part of that 77.7 number is the fact that he hasn't had anyone to throw the ball to. So how much of that is them dropping the ball? How much of that is them just not executing? I don't know. I get that that's a lower number for Tom, and he would like that to be a lot higher.
Tommy.
But I just think at the end of the day, this is a different team now. We're not talking about the same Patriots. They are a different team. They are a different offense, and that should scare people.
Well, one of the things we need to keep an eye on is how much better do the wide receiver numbers get, because they're already up 7 positions to 18th in the NFL as a wide receiver group, now with Josh Gordon making his impact. And you know, obviously, you just got a lot more offense. Gronkowski's going to have a lot more space now. So it'll be interesting. Sonny Michel, I think, gives them, you know, some weapons. James White helps them. So I think there's a lot of different angles for Tom Brady to work here. New England's 10-0 straight up at home. They're 9-1 against the spread at home when they're a TD or less favorite. So that's the case here. You're only 3.5 points, which means you're 9-1 against the spread in this set of circumstances. But here's the one reason I'm taking the Patriots to win: cover and go under. Bill Belichick has 3 extra days to game plan because they played last Thursday night. It's essentially a long extended week, almost a bye week, right? Because you're getting full 10 days.
Yep.
It's really difficult to go up against Bill Belichick when he's got normal preparation time. He's got 3 extra days to prepare for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. You know he's seen all the tape. It's now week 5. I'd remind you that a year ago, the Chiefs were 5-0, and then they lost 6-7. Will this be the same Chiefs team? Probably not. I have a real problem thinking they're going to lose 6-7. But I still think Belichick wins this game or finds a way to win this game. I got the Patriots 29, the Chiefs 24. The Patriots will win, cover, and it goes under.
Yeah, for me, this is all about the Patriots offense and how many points they can put up. We've already seen what Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense can do. We know that they're going to light it up, right? We know that they're a high-powered offense. But for me, I wonder what James White and Sonny Michel are going to do in this game, because you have guys like Josh Gordon back, who, by the way, played that and had that great play, knowing a quarter of the playbook. So what's going to happen when he knows all the playbook and they can get real exotic with it? So I think when you open up that flexibility with Josh Gordon, that can only help. So for me, I think it's going to be 35-27. Pats are going to win, and I think it's convincingly. I don't think this game will be in question when it gets to the end.
Well, you're talking about offense. I'm much more talking about defense, and I love the way that the Patriots have rebounded. You know, you lost your defensive coordinator, Matt Patricia. He's now the head coach of the crappy Lions. And obviously that's a big transition for you, and you haven't gotten worse. You've gotten better.
Yeah.
They're the second-rated coverage unit. They're one of the top defensive units in the NFL. But this is a different Chiefs offense, and I think a lot of people don't understand that. that you're going to have to find a way to cover. And Jason and Devin McCourty are going to have huge games. Stephon Gilmore is going to have a big game because there's so much speed. You can't take the wrong angle even one time. That's a real problem. But I still like the Patriots to get it done. So again, I'll go 29-24 Patriots win cover, and it goes under. One of the more interesting games of the week, the Rams at the Broncos. The Rams are a 7-point favorite. The number's 52.5, but there's a 70% chance of snow in Denver, and the high is going to be 27 degrees for this game. We looked and could not find a snow game on Jerry Goff's resume, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
Because they're expecting some offense. 52.5 points is a decent number. The Rams are freaking amazing. This is, you know, an offense that has spread the ball around now. Obviously, Cooks and Kupp are both in the concussion protocol. They're expected to be ready for the game.
Yeah.
And they're expected to play. But they're going through concussions. That's something to watch. But this is a game where if you have Todd Gurley, you're loving Todd Gurley in this game. He's not only going to catch the ball, but if it is indeed a slippery track and it's snowing, you're going to have to grind it out. I really like the Rams in this game.
Yeah, for me, my biggest struggle is the idea that, once again, and I've said this before, Todd Gurley wants to beat you with speed and finesse rather than just powering you and running like the way, for instance, a Marshawn Lynch runs. Marshawn Lynch would be the ultimate back in this kind of a game, right? It's snowy, it's rough, like he's just going to run through you. But I like what Todd Gurley brings to the table, and I'm with you. I think he brings a big day. I got him going for at least 100 yards. I think they're going to ride him. They're going to use him, and he will break the will of that Denver defense.
Number one run-blocking team in the NFL.
Yeah.
Is the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah.
They're not the number one run offense. That's the Chargers. But the Rams are very good up front, and I think they should be able to adjust to poor weather.
Yeah, I think the other X factor in this game is special teams. I think if Johnny Hecker can have a big day for the Rams, I think they're going to be in a much better position. Because let's be honest, they're not going to run away with this game. This isn't going to be some 40-point performance in the snow. I don't buy that. The snow has a funny way of neutralizing a big-time offense, right? So I think at the end of the day, I'm going to go 24-17 Rams. I think they edge it out, but I do think this game is in question early.
Well, it's interesting you bring up special teams because the number two rated special teams in the NFL, the Denver Broncos. This is a team that understands how to kick, how to punt, how to tackle, how to cover kicks when they are in the snow. The Rams are the 18th ranked special teams in the NFL. I'm going to go Rams 24, Broncos 17.
So we're in agreement.
Yeah, that feels like the number to me. I know the Broncos are better at home. They're not a very good football team right now. Frankly, and I'm not saying that they can't win this game, but I just like the way the Rams are able to play multiple styles. And frankly, I think Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald are getting better and better and building chemistry every single game. And I think that's why I like them so much. Now, this next game, I have a lot more questions about this next game. And that is the Dolphins and the Bears in Miami. The Bears are a 1-point favorite in this game. The number is 44. And I think the Dolphins are in a really interesting time because they have to make a decision. Is Ryan Tannehill still your starting quarterback? And that's not so easy to say going up against my R and we, the Chicago Bears of Chicago. I don't know why I keep saying that. Anyway, the point is that I really like this Bears defense. I don't like this Dolphins offense. They're 29th in pass. They're 28th in pass blocking. But the one thing that scares me is Mitchell Trubisky. No team has more interceptions in the NFL than the Miami Dolphins at 10. Now, granted, it's a small scope because the Bears have 8. So it's not like they've got 10 and everybody else has 3. But the Bears have the Dolphins lead the NFL with 10 interceptions.
Yeah.
Here's one other thing that bothers me. And I'm a big Pro Football Focus fan. Okay. I am. Who do they rate as the number one coverage team in the NFL?
Bears.
The Chicago Bears. I don't buy that. I'm selling that. I'm not buying that. And the thing that really worries me is that Stills and Wilson have big play ability. And one of the things that Ryan Tannehill does really well is throw the ball down the field vertically. That makes me a little nervous. The other thing that makes me nervous in this game is the Michinator, Mr. Trubisky, the biscuit. I'll stop. Has to continue to perform. He needs to be Trubisky against the Bucks every single week.
Yep.
Maybe not put up those numbers, but he has to have that swag.
Yeah.
And I just don't see that he's there yet. The Chicago media has written columns and opinion pieces, and if you're listening to The Score or ESPN 1000 in Chicago, all you're hearing about is Trubisky had a breakthrough, Trubisky this, Trubisky that. Everybody in Chicago is drinking the Trubisky Kool-Aid. But I'm not. He makes me nervous. Having said that, the Bears are going to kick the crap out of the Dolphins. 31-17 is going to be the final score. The Bears will win, they'll cover, and this is going over 44.
Yeah, I don't think your point about the vertical threat is going to be an issue because I don't think Tannehill is going to have that kind of time. I think the pass rush is going to get there all day, and I think they're going to eat that offense alive. I'm with you, though. I think this is a pretty easy victory, 27-14 Bears. And your analogy was exactly the analogy I was going to use. Which Trubisky are we going to get? Are we getting Tampa Trubisky, or are we getting awful Trubisky? You know, pick six kind of Trubisky. I don't know.
Are we getting awful Trubisky?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but that's where I'm at with them.
Yeah.
He hasn't made some breakthrough. The Bucs were awful. Awful.
Yeah, they're not good. And by the way, that's another team that's really interesting. Is Tampa Bay, because they're starting famous Jameis, the crabby Winston guy. What do you think the final score here is?
27-14, Chicago.
Yeah, I'm going 31-17. I feel like the Bears are gonna have their way. This feels like a defensive touchdown game. So I'm pretty comfortable with it.
Cool.
That the Bears will win that game. So our winners this week in the National Football League, the Patriots 29-24. They win, cover, and go under against the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. The Rams and Broncos 24-17. We say the Rams will win, cover, and go under in the snow in Denver. And the Bears will be the monsters of South Beach, and they will pound the Dolphins. I say 31-17. That means the Bears win, they cover, and they go over. Out of these three games that we picked, do you have one that you're more confident in than the other?
Oh, I'm confident the Bears are going to win that game. There's no doubt about it.
So more than the Patriots, more than the Rams,
yeah, because you're confident the Patriot the game is the one that's the biggest up and down kind of game. Yeah. I mean, the Chiefs could go out and put up 45 on any team.
Well, anytime you're within a score.
Yeah.
And 29-24, the number in the Patriots-Chiefs game is 3.5. Anytime you're within a score.
It comes down to execution, as it always does at any level of athletics. I mean, if the Chiefs execute offensively, they're really hard to beat.
I agree with that. Yeah, but we'll see. I actually feel really good about our picks.
And the only thing, and I would have gone with the Rams-Denver game as like a lock that I feel great about.
That
snow really scares me. And I don't doubt Goff. It's more about the fact that it's snowing, it's tough conditions. There's going to be passes in that game that typically would have been caught. They're going to be dropped. Like,
I looked. I do not see that he's played a snow game in
his career.
He's
played cold games, just not snow games.
Not snow games.
Yeah.
70% chance of snow.
Oh, it'll snow.
Yeah, 27 degrees in snow in Denver for the LA Rams.
Good luck, bud.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. A couple other stories we want to get to on this here, the show today. How about your Los Angeles Dodgers, who you actually can't
stand? Don't call them mine.
Yeah, Jake is a San Francisco Giants fan, and so thus meaning that these here Dodgers are not his team. But how do you feel about this Brewers series? It's interesting. Walker Buehler is going to get the Game 3 start. Hyun-Jin Ryu is going to get the Game 2 start. And, of course, your favorite postseason pitcher after David Price is Clayton Kershaw. He gets the opening start tonight. Confidence level on the Dodgers in this series?
I don't know that I like them to win the series. I think it's if the Brewers can win both games at home, I think the Dodgers are going to have a real tough time winning this series. I mean, Kershaw cannot allow Yelich to beat him. It's that simple. If Yelich beats you in this series, you're not winning the series. And what really scares me about this matchup is the fact that Yelich is a professional hitter. All we talk about all the time for the last 5 years, I feel like, is every time Clayton Kershaw goes out in the postseason, he's going to dominate. It's going to be 7-8 inning, shutout baseball, Verlander style. And that's never the case.
I think you're being too hard on Clayton Kershaw. He's had... Yeah, has he dropped duds? Absolutely.
The outing that scares me, the outing that I lean on every time is the Cardinals outing. When he went to Busch Stadium and got lit, and Matt Adams beat him big time, took him way deep. And I think that changed him as a pitcher. I really think that changed him as a pitcher.
Well, one of the things you got to look at is the way this rotation breaks out. Chacín against the Dodgers did not exactly put up what I would call great numbers in his only start, a 16.62 ERA, 4 1/3, 5 hits, 8 earned, 9 runs, 3 bombs, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts. But here's the problem for the Dodgers. They're also starting Gio Gonzalez, who historically has pitched really well against the Dodgers, and they're starting Miley in game 2, who's also been dominant.
A lot of lefties in this series.
Dominant against the Dodgers. I think Craig Counsell probably does not get enough credit for being a good manager. Wade Miley against the Dodgers was, by some people were surprised by that. They thought Chacín would get the game 1 start or the game 2 start. No, he's starting game 3 against Walker Buehler. Why is the Walker Buehler thing significant? Because he got lit his last time out. And that's the guy, and you can talk all day about Clayton Kershaw. I look at Walker Buehler. In his 1 postseason start, it's 5 innings, 2 hits, 5 earned. It makes me a little nervous that you're relying on Walker Buehler, who's coming off of not the best start of his career against Atlanta in a real pivotal game against the Brewers.
Yeah, and Walker Buehler is a fastball guy, and he's one of those guys, and I refer to this a lot. Him, DeGrom, there's several guys, pitchers in the big leagues, who throw fastballs that are straight as an arrow. Syndergaard is this way in some respects. They throw their four-seam fastball, and it's very straight. It's 95 to 98. Big leaguers get to that. Consistently they get to that. And that's why, that's part of the reason why he struggled. The other reason he struggled, and I've leaned on this a ton, if you haven't pitched in the postseason, you're in for a surprise. It's a new beast. It's a new feeling. It's not a regular season start. There's more emotions there.
Well, if it's emotional, let's hope he relies on that one start he had against the Brewers, rather. He was pretty good. He took the loss, but listen to his numbers, Jake. In that one game, he pitched 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned run against the Brewers. That's pretty good. No walks, 7 Ks. I mean, that's really admirable.
Yeah, you're in that game. You're definitely in that game. And I think so often we talk about this in baseball. If you can, this is what we had our epic debate about with John Lester. John Lester walked one guy and it cost him the game, right? So if you walk guys, you're killing yourself in the postseason. So the idea that he didn't walk anybody and got through the seventh, I love that out of Walker Buehler. And he's a young guy. And in today's game, there's not a lot of young studs, man. There's not a lot of guys who would be starting game 3 of a championship series, man. That says a lot about this guy.
Do you believe in Ryu? I mean, he had a nice bounce back. You're 7-3 with a sub-2 ERA.
I think it gives you a quality start, but I'm not a big Ryu guy, to be honest with you. Like, he's got good stuff. The thing about him is he's that lefty who's got the massive curveball that changes your eye level, and then all of a sudden he can dot the outside corner. Like, I he's solid, but I don't love the guy. I don't love him.
Yeah, that I think is one of the critical starts. They have to win, in my opinion, they have to win the Kershaw start, because I think the Ryu start is going to be interesting. I mean, they have to control Yelich. We always talk famously about the Colorado Rockies. The key to beating the Rockies is Blackman and LeMahieu. You got to keep them off base. I don't know what the key to beating Milwaukee is, because they, in my opinion, are really a balanced offense. They have guys who can run. They have guys who've got pop. You've got almost a triple crown winner in Christian Yelich, a guy that I think is likely to be the MVP. I mean, they have a really nice balance, a mix of talent throughout their lineup. What do you think of Kershaw going up against guys like Kane, Yelich? Ryan Braun doesn't scare me as much. He's almost a part-time player. He's that first guy that you double switch now. But Shaw and Aguiar, and I think Moustakas has given them huge at-bats in the postseason. I mean, do you like about this?
Look at those names you're saying. You're talking about Lorenzo Cain, Mike Moustakas. What are they famous for? They're famous for their days with the Royals.
Yeah, big wins.
Big wins, big postseason wins, going out there and getting victories. They have that leadership from the postseason experience, and I really like that about them.
But they're getting, and this is the other thing, not to go on and on about their offense, they're getting big hits from Arcia.
Mm-hmm.
They're not relying on Yelich. Now, he's producing, but he's getting the production because he's able to hit with guys on base. They're consistently turning over the lineup, which I really like. Clayton Kershaw has a huge challenge tonight to open this series. I really like him, and I think if you can control Yelich, And really, it's Yelich and Braun are the two guys, because you're going to get hit by Moustakas and Kane, in my opinion. You cannot allow Yelich and Braun to hit home runs, to find the gaps.
Yeah, those are daggers, man.
Yeah, I think if you can control the momentum, you're going to be fine. Because a guy like an Aguiar, I don't think he's a guy that's going to knock you out of a series.
Yeah, he's the guy that hits your mistake. And I know most big leaguers can do that, but Aguiar is not a, in my opinion, a professional all-around hitter. The guy has a ton of pop, and he won't beat you if you execute. So if you're, you know, locationally sound, he's not going to beat you. He's not going to have a Christian Yelich type at bat where he beats you with a dinker over the shortstop. That's not who he is.
Man, and I know it's only one series, but Moustakas has a 916 OPS.
Yeah, he's experienced. He knows what he's doing, man.
It's Braun with a 385 average. They didn't do it with home runs. They did it with really good approach and really good execution. And if you're the Dodgers, that should scare you.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting. Where are you at on Houston and Boston?
I mean, I still think it's going to be a slugfest, but at the end of the day, I still think Houston's the better team. I think the pitching will win that series for them. Verlander, how are we even questioning Verlander at this point? Is there? I know you're not. I'm just saying, like, in general, people still wonder, is Verlander going to give us that great start again? Dude, he hasn't. When's the last time he gave you a bad postseason outing?
Yeah, but here's the point, though. I think Chris Sale has turned a corner. I mean, he looks healthy. That shoulder finally looks like he's his old self. If his shoulder had any questions about it, they wouldn't have used him in relief. And this is the other thing, by the way. The way Cora is using his entire postseason roster, you're using Porcello and Sale in relief, and it's working out perfectly. The way he's using the bench, rotating guys, using Bradley,
the way he is,
you know, pushing the buttons on this team, has really been admirable. And I look at the first two games of this series, Verlander and Sale, I think, is dead even. I'm going to go with Cole because I don't believe in David Price in the postseason.
Yeah, I don't know that it's dead even for Verlander and Sale. The one thing that really stands out is he was healthy last year. Sale was perfectly healthy last year in his start and didn't have a good start.
Did not perform.
And who was that against? Oh, that's right. It was against the Astros. So they know what's coming. I'm just saying that I think this year, yeah, maybe he's turned a corner with his health, but if we're really questioning whether he's healthy or not going into this start, that's concerning to me. The guy needs to give you seven innings.
Chris Sale is as competitive as anybody.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I have no questions that Chris Sale will step up his performance. None whatsoever. I'm not going to say that I'm not worried about this, because I am. I think it's going to be one of the great games tomorrow night. I'm going to be on ESPN Radio Game Night. I'll be hosting Game Night tomorrow night after that game. So I'm really excited to be talking about that. But I'm really looking forward to Chris Sale's start. And I am by no means a Red Sox fan. But he is one of those guys who has a chance to put his team on his back.
Yeah.
Because when he's right and he's dominant and he's locating that fastball and mixing up his secondary pitches, he's unhittable.
Yeah, he should be their Bumgarner. That's what he should be.
Yes.
I mean, he should absolutely be that guy. And he hasn't been yet, but I also believe that he hasn't had that many chances to be that guy yet. You know, I mean, last year was his first postseason outing, right? And he struggled, which is fine. I get it. It's your first ever outing. I even said going into the start he would struggle, and he did. But now we're on to this year. So can he change that? Can he
dominated the Yankees?
Exactly. So I'm just saying, like, yeah, he's showing signs of life and showing signs of, hey, I am in the regular season, I'm the same guy in the postseason. I had one bad outing last year, and it's changed the narrative about who I am in the postseason. But now it's my turn to rebound from that.
He's a pitch count guy.
For sure.
He pitched well against the Yankees, but 93 pitches in 5 1/3 is not great.
No.
You've got to get through. In the postseason, I think you need 7 innings. Ideally, it would be that old benchmark I've always used is 3 innings or 3 earned runs, 7 innings.
Yeah.
And if you can get that from your starter, and guys like Kershaw, Verlander, Sale, the best pitchers in baseball, you would expect that. And that's the only thing that concerns me about the Brewers. I'm not a Gio Gonzalez guy.
Yeah, their staff is not as talented as other staffs in the postseason.
Yeah, but their bullpen's dynamic. In Milwaukee, like, they have a dominating bullpen. I just am curious to see how Gio Gonzalez does as a soft tossing curveball pitcher in the postseason.
Yeah.
Against one of the best offensive lineups. By the way, the game one lineup for the Dodgers is really interesting in that Taylor and Matt Kemp are in the lineup tonight against Gio, which is not surprising, right-handed hitting against a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah, soft-tossing left-handed pitcher, as you were just saying.
So I'm really excited about it. I'm a passionate baseball fan, and I love the postseason. So I've waited to talk about the fact that I have to go to a movie tonight with my wife. And she got to pick the movie. And we're going to see this new Bradley Cooper movie, which I can't remember the name of.
A Star is Born.
Thank you, A Star is Born. It's 2 hours and 17 minutes of pain for dudes because I have testosterone. I'm curious what it'll be like. It's got rave reviews. People love it. And this really is a Bradley Cooper movie. If memory serves, he's directing it. But where are you at with chick flicks? How often do you... Because I would say A Star is Born feels like a chick flick.
Yeah, it's a romantic heartstrings kind of movie.
Yeah. Are you a guy that is just fine going to see a chick flick?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the end of the world to me or anything. It's not even that much of a chore, really.
Really? This feels like a movie that I'm not going to like, and I'm a little concerned about it.
Yeah, you're kind of a tough guy on movies, though. You don't love most movies you see. I mean, it has to be like, you know.
Well, and this feels like a musical because it's about, you know, falling in love. Like, he discovers this struggling artist and, you know, it's all about falling in love.
It's a gusher.
Yeah, exactly right. Falling in love. And we're going to create a star and she is born and they fall in love. Okay. And then I'm guessing she gets hit by a train or torn apart by hyenas. I don't know.
Hyenas?
I don't know what the tragedy will be at the end of the movie. But it's going to be one of those movies where you know they're going to wind up breaking up. And it is what it is. And then Bradley Cooper's going to have that stupid hair of his. And
he's going to have the scene with his shirt off. We get it.
Yeah, and we get it. You have abs and pecs and, you know,
get it. You work out and you can play a guitar a little bit.
And you're just a dick.
You're not Dave Grohl.
Yeah, go back and do more Vegas party movies. The point is, listen to me. I'm doing this for my wife, but I wonder, if you had to guess, is this a movie where I'm like, oh man, that movie was terrible? Or is this a movie like, wow, I'm really glad we went and saw that. That was a good movie.
I mean, I'm always going to say that this particular movie will trend towards, oh, that was terrible, because you're not too much of a chick flick guy. And I'm not saying I am.
What does that mean?
You're not. Like, when's the last time you saw like a heartfelt kind of movie? Like one of those kind of movies? Like this kind of movie?
I went and saw Date Night. That wasn't really a chick flick. That was more, or Game Night, I think it was
game
called.
Game Night, yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I'm trying to think, what is the, Manchester by the Sea was certainly a chick flick. That movie was terrible.
Yeah, so that's
what
I'm saying.
That movie was depressing.
You're telling me, you're going to think this is an awful movie. There's no doubt. I mean, you're much more of a, famously, you're a Dark Knight fan. You're a Gladiator fan. Those styles of movie, like suspenseful,
Ronin,
Jason Bourne, you know.
Yeah. You know, I saw a thing, by the way, not to, you know, like go on and on about this, but
right.
I saw a thing on Heath Ledger today on LinkedIn that his preparation for the Dark Knight. Do you realize how he prepared to become the Joker?
No.
He locked himself essentially in an apartment for 6 months and drove himself into that role. That's how he, like, he did a bunch of paintings. Like, he was trying to, you know, find the right voice, like the voice he would use for the Joker. And I didn't even know this either, but he swore that he would never, ever do a comic book movie. And then he saw Batman Begins. And that's when he said, I want to be in The Dark Knight. And I want to be the Joker in The Dark Knight. And I'm like, wow, man, that's freaking unbelievable.
Yeah.
So he apparently locks himself in this apartment for 6 months. And tries to build a psychotic dude in his head. And he, like, practices the voice. He even does these beautiful paintings. like these portrait paintings where the faces are all twisted up, and like he really put his mind into this role. And it's amazing. And I had forgotten that he died before he ever saw the finished product. So Heath Ledger never even got to see the finished product.
Yeah.
And people are saying that, you know, that he went crazy and that's why he died. Well, that's not true. But the story of how he did die, like he overdosed on prescription drugs, and it's just a remarkable story. And then to have never seen the movie and then to win an Academy Award for it is remarkable.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about movies, and I just stumbled across that and I thought it was amazing. It just, I don't know how those guys do it. I really don't.
Commitment, man. It's absolutely commitment. You talk about self-discipline. That is the highest level.
Well, hey, speaking of chick flicks, you're going to a wedding tonight.
That's
you're
not
even involved in, and you don't even know the people getting married.
Yeah, they're my girlfriend's friends.
So you're taking one for the team as well?
I mean, I guess, in a sense.
Whatever. Well, you're not a chick flick guy, but you're going.
I'm not going to see a movie.
What are you going to wear to this wedding?
Just like button down and pants and a tie.
Yeah. So you're getting dressed up to go hang out and celebrate people have you ever even met these people?
Yeah, once.
What? Yeah. So you're going to celebrate people you don't even know.
Hey, I got invited. That's all that matters.
How much are you going to put in the collection?
I'm not putting anything.
You're not. So you're going to a wedding that you're not even going to bring them a gift, and you're not going to leave them any money.
I was not asked to do that.
Right, but you're going to a wedding. You're going to bring them a bottle or something, or?
Sure. I mean, now that you're bringing it up, I guess, yeah.
So you would have just gone there.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to get your car back?
Yeah, I am, finally. It's only been a month. It was a month yesterday.
Was it really?
Yeah.
You've been driving Maya Barth for a month.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah. I hate it. I hate driving. You know what I hate about it? Now that I've been rear-ended, and now that I'm driving driving your car, mm-hmm. It scares me to death. Every time I go to a light, I'm like, all right, how long is it going to be till you rear end me again? I'm like sitting
really?
There. Yeah, I'm like, bro. Like,
You know how it is
when you're driving and you see this pickup truck coming right up your ass and you're like, hey, bro, slow down, dude. Slow down, bro.
This got out of hand.
Slow down, bro. Chill. Like, don't come in that quickly. Like,
coming in hot.
Yeah, like all the time. And I never noticed how often it is that people like don't take their time to slow down. They just slam on their brakes and it's like, wow.
Okay. So the hood vents won't be on the hood.
No, I have to have that done by somebody.
Don't forget to pick them up when you go pick up the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're scared of driving the Abarth now?
No, I'm not scared of driving the car. I'm
you're just
scared
self-conscious?
About getting I'm scared about getting hit in your car. That scares me. Yeah.
It's fine. Just because my car's faster, that's what makes you nervous.
Sure.
You know, whatever. It's fine. All right. Make sure you find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. Don't forget to catch me on ESPN Radio Game Night this Saturday, which is the 13th, and then the next Saturday, which is the 20th. But not the Saturday after that because I'll be in Maui. So, yeah, whatever. Anyway, find us online, themontyshow.com. On Twitter, The Monty Show, and wherever you're listening, thanks for listening, as always, to The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.